This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Steve Charles, co-founder of Immix Group. And today we're going to be talking about quality management and quality of parts that the federal government purchases and uses for a whole wide range of activities. And maybe today you may have more focus on the DOD, but I think just about every agency has to buy stuff, and they're concerned with making sure the stuff that they buy is not counterfeit, and it is complies with standards, and it's getting what they have, and they don't buy fake supplies. That kind of boils down to it. But before we begin, Steve, you've been on the air probably more than I have here in Federal News Radio. Why don't you tell the audience again about your background and what Immix Group's all about, and then we'll get into the discussion.
Sure. Well, it's a pleasure to be here, John. You are very well known in our community, and it's just an honor to be here. So I'm Steve Charles, co-founder of Immix Group. We help commercial technology companies, manufacturers, software publishers, do business with the government, helping them grow their business and stay out of trouble.
Stay out of trouble. I should take a couple classes in that. I want to set up this discussion with a silly story, because I do silly stories all the time. So my son has a 14-year-old car, and the battery failed. So he took it in. They said, well, the battery failed. Then they said, well, the alternator failed too. They replaced the alternator, drove the thing home. Car didn't start. So I called up the mechanic. We had the car towed back to the shop. They had to put in a new alternator, and then it's fine. Well, look at this. They had to pay for the tow. They had to pay for the replacement alternator. They had to pay for the labor for the replacement alternator. They had to pay for putting it back in a box and sending it to the manufacturer. Then he had to pay for me being mad at them. Now, I'm the biggest proponent of them in the world because they fixed a problem. It still cost me time and cost them time. So one little tiny problem, I mean, you could say, well, it was just an $80 alternator. Oh, no. And you can go on for hours about this. So an $80 alternator, no big thing. What about an aircraft carrier? I mean, and this is what we're talking about is quality in parts and making sure that the government gets what they buy.
Sure. I mean, it all started with Senate hearings back in the summer of 2011. The Senate Armed Services Committee and its report showing that in many cases, we have weapon systems that are increasingly being populated with counterfeit parts. Most of them are repair, replace kinds of insertions, and it does affect performance, and it can actually cost lives.
Yeah, and I think just from a supplier perspective, if an organization that manufactures parts or resells parts or brokers parts, if they understand the cost of supplying bad parts, I think maybe this is the objective of the show today. Number one, let the manufacturers know that it really costs them a whole lot more than they realize to supply bad parts. Most studies that come out of Gartner and Forrester show that only 50% of manufacturers are real careful with quality supply management. And if they would do that, that might be add to their bottom line. But also, the government's trying to figure out a way to enforce this mandate for quality, aren't they?
Well, they really are. And I guess it helps me when I talk about this to kind of separate the parts from the products. We have parts that go into products. We have parts that are spare parts for obsolete weapon systems. This is a huge area. It crosses multiple industries. So the Senate Armed Services Committee was focused on the electronic parts, but when they wrote the law, it includes anything that includes electronic parts. And we here at Immix Group are focused on the commercial products that many of the name brand electronics manufacturers produce. And the concern is making sure that those products remain genuine through the supply chain into the government. And that's our role at Immix Group. Our trusted supplier program is about making sure the linkage between the OEM, the legitimate manufacturer, and the government customer is maintained and that there's traceability there. That said, the parts world, the spare parts world for weapon systems and so on, is it involves parts that are no longer manufactured.
That's the question. Okay, so you have to maintain something, and where do you find spare parts?
Right, exactly. And so these spare parts increasingly are coming from recyclers. Our e-waste goes offshore, often to China, where the parts get unglued, unsoldered, washed in the river, and a process I've been informed of called blacktopping, where where the surface is they use solvents and then recoat them, and sometimes the part numbers are accurate and sometimes they're not.
Yeah, this can be a big major problem. And if you just look at it from, you know, 10, 15-year perspective, back in the early 2000s, there was probably not many incidents of this counterfeit parts, but now it's exploded, hasn't it?
It has. It's because there's so much money in it. And the concern is because of the way these parts are refurbished and reinserted into the marketplace, it involves many independent brokers, and those folks aren't necessarily managed very well. Some of them are complying with standards in this area and others aren't. Mm-hmm. When a government prime contractor is sourcing parts, they don't have the wherewithal to track it back to the absolute source, being able to trace every hop along the way. It's one of the reasons why the law is being proposed to change this year that would make a special exemption for obsolete parts. But the problem still remains.
In the commercial world, if you have a Xerox printer, there are hundreds of brokers and dealers out there who can supply parts for you. That's no problem at all. They tend to be small businesses that are very flexible because if someone calls at 7 o'clock at night, you get a part, you FedEx it out. It makes all kinds of sense. Now, in the federal government, let's just say it, some of the large organizations may be more responsible for than the small organizations. So you're mandated to deal with small businesses, and the small businesses may have more issues in this. Well, what do? You have to use this XYZ, but we know there's problems. We have to use it.
Right, exactly. The two demand generators for counterfeit parts or questionable parts is the small business policy. Buy from small. And the primes have to do this too. They are required to buy from small business. And of course, price, cost. And so the two primary drivers in purchasing now mitigate against actually buying from authorized partners, right? And that's our problem.
You know, in the small business world, let's go back to my son's car. If they bought a Ronco alternator and they decided there was a lot of problems with, they're not going to buy Ronco alternators again, no matter if. No one's going to force them to buy from Kansas or just buy from. They're going to buy from the best quality manufacturer they can because the profit's based on it. But the hands are tied here.
Correct. The buyers in the government as well as the buyers in the primes. And so Congress said, you know what, we're not going to micromanage this. We will hold everybody liable in the supply chain, and you guys figure it out. And so we're in the rulemaking process right now, and everyone's trying to figure out how to live to these standards. There are global standards, quality management, you know as well as anyone, that standards abound. It's just that the government and its procurement process has not embraced these standards, has not incorporated them into the rulemaking process, is still of a mode to require that we sign up for liability.
Without defining the...
Right. The proposed rule says you're going to change your purchasing systems to detect and avoid counterfeit parts, but doesn't really explain how, what would be acceptable, but says if it's not acceptable, we won't pay you.
And this this suggestion you have is for commercial software and hardware products. Is that right?
Right. So the program that we are implementing at Immix Group is for the commercial products, not the chips and the resistors and the integrated circuits, but actual products that are made up of those parts, making sure that we can guarantee that those are products that come from an original equipment manufacturer, from an authorized production facility, and that we're maintaining traceability through the government supply chain as it makes its hops to the government facility so that we can guarantee it.
You know, I'm a lot older than you, Steve, and I remember watching a TV show called Who Do You Trust? With Johnny Carson. And no one knows that, unless maybe the retirement community people know that. But that's what we're talking about here. Who do you trust? So if you go to the store, you get a box that says alternator for a jet airplane. How do you know if it's it's good? What about the board that goes into that alternator in the plane? And how do you know who do you trust? I mean, this is a key question that more and more people are trying to understand. It's very difficult.
It is the question. You know, the legislation suggested that prime contractors either buy directly from OEMs or OEM-authorized channels or trusted suppliers.
Right, and that's real fuzzy.
Yes, no definition for trusted supplier. And the proposed rule that requires primes to build these systems also says buy from OEMs or OEM-authorized channels or trusted suppliers, but does not go far enough in defining, doesn't go anywhere at all, actually, in defining what is the basis for this trust? What is a trusted supplier? So in our program, we're trying to define that for commercial products. We have not yet defined it for the parts.
We'll have to take a quick break. We come back, talk more about Johnny Carson, who do you trust, the federal government, and a very, very significant problem they have with managing quality for suppliers. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Steve Charles, co-founder, MX Group. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Steve Charles, co-founder, MX Group. We're talking about supplier quality management. We're talking about when the federal government makes a purchase, how do you know that this is a valid product? Who do you trust? You know, what is a trusted supplier? And Steve has been in this world for many years, and he's come up with a proposed solution that may shed some light on solving this problem. But it's a huge, big problem, and I don't know if there's any snap-your-finger quick problem solutions here. It's getting kind of tough. Well, one thing we didn't mention in the first block, Steve, was, okay, if you do something wrong, what happens? You get a yellow flag, you get out of the game for a few minutes, you get a red flag, or do they bulldoze your house? I mean, what happens if, let's say, company A supplies a product that turns out to be defective or more problems than they thought? What happens?
Sure. Well, here in the procurement system, the government procurement system, everything begins with law. And so the law associated with this is the law that Congress passed in the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act. And in short, it holds everybody in the supply chain liable, not just for the cost of the part, but for all any damages and repairs that are required. You know, so to use your alternator example, I mean, you tick through all kinds of downstream implications, consequences, all of which cost. And those costs then are to be borne by the prime contractor who was involved in having this part inserted that caused so much trouble downstream.
In the manufacturing world, there's something called COPQ, which is cost of poor supplier quality. And these vendors really try to be careful about that. Now, what happens if you have a guy who sets up a warehouse in Alexandria and he stocks parts for, let's say, for the DOD they might have for obsolete parts? And if you go after them, you're going to go after smoke and dust because they can close the door tomorrow. And it's just that you can go after the larger companies. And so you have a large government contractor that trusts one of their small vendors and turns out there's a problem. They go back to the small vendor, they're boarded up and gone, and they can be gone tomorrow. It is difficult.
It's very difficult. The prime contractors, of course, pushed back on that 2012 law saying, listen, we cannot account for liability that we can't define. Wall Street just doesn't have a way for us to account for that. And so we need some kind of safe harbor. So in the 2013 amendment, the safe harbor follows three pillars. One, a prime contractor has to build a system to detect and avoid counterfeit parts. Number two, they have to buy from OEM or OEM authorized partners or from a trusted supplier, hearkening back to the original law. And then three, agree to report any concerns about counterfeit or even suspect counterfeit to the government industry data exchange program, the GIDEP. So those three, a system, sourcing and reporting, are the three pillars that allow a prime contractor to find the safe harbor. But like everything, the devil's in the details. And so we're now in the process of trying to implement this law with a proposed rule that would define more about what this system is supposed to look like and what a trusted supplier is supposed to be like. There was a big public meeting just this past Friday on this. And I'm telling you, every industry, every association, every type of player in this market has opinions about how this should work. And no one's happy with the rule that was proposed because there's just not enough detail to build a system or build a process to have confidence, whether you're a buyer or a seller.
I'm a radio guy, so I get to say snappy phrases. And the snappy phrase here is, other than authentic. Now, isn't that a discreet phrase that probably some lawyer dreamt up? Well, is this part fake? Well, it's other than authentic. And so that's the classification. Isn't that a strange group of three words, huh?
Right, right. And I have a question for you, John. Other than authentic, what if that part doesn't meet spec? Is it not authentic? Is it considered counterfeit? The definition of counterfeit today actually would include a quality escape, whether it was counterfeit or not. And with all of these downstream implications of 100% liability for the part, replacement, repair of any damages that it causes.
So mid-July, there's a deadline. The contractors, as of today, must pay for counterfeit parts. Okay, we know that. And July 15th, there's going to be the government's going to receive comments on this whole process.
Sure.
And one would think that there'd be hundreds of people respond to this, but I don't know how many have. I mean, is it?
It's probably not hundreds, but it's probably dozens. Many companies are, of course, members of associations and are working together with their association to draft comments. There are actually associations of associations that represent consensus views of across a number of organizations. So, you know, the aerospace industries, Tech America, and then other associations that are more focused on the folks who broker and deal in these components, very different industries, very different associations. They'll all be providing comments.
And we just mentioned the National Defense Authorization Act, 2011-2012, revised 2013. Now, you may think, oh, this is just the Department of Defense. No. I mean, let's step back here, you know. The folks up at NIST, they just came up with a modification for their security standards called 800-53. It's all of 457 pages. Category number one, by the way, supply chains, supply quality management. So, you know, it's not just the guys in the Pentagon worrying about this. This is everyone worrying about this. Back DHS has come up for ways to prevent some of this. So this is a common problem throughout the federal government. And maybe your walking point on this and your trusted supplier program will be emulated by the civilian agency and say, well, that's not a bad idea. Maybe we'll use that. Or it's a common problem everywhere.
Yes, we see that. You know, of course, the NIST standards, the 853, it's all to implement FISMA, a 10-year-old law around security of government computer systems. And of course, security of systems does involve the electronics that are part of them, the switches and the routers, and there's all kinds of counterfeiting concerns in that area as well. So in that world, we do get more into the products that are made up of electronic parts, as opposed to the DoD world, which is still primarily concerned about the components. So our trusted supplier program is about helping to make sure those manufacturers are protected by making sure that the products that the government receives, either through primes or directly, are genuine products of the manufacturer. You know, in the product world, there's a whole world called the gray market. Excess inventories get dumped to independent brokers. Those products go off to warehouses. There's opportunity for tampering. And the concern is that we just don't know. I remember when we were authorized to first start representing Cisco products, I couldn't believe how many phone calls I got from independent brokers saying, hey, listen, when you have a requirement, just call me up, give me the part number. And I'll quote you.
It's just like a Cisco.
I'll quote you. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to pick on any particular manufacturer here, but in my particular case, my story, I got at least 3 calls a day for the first week when they found out we were Cisco authorized, offering to sell me unauthorized Cisco product.
And this is, in my world, is called supply chain. And there's a very, very long supply chain for many of these products. And there's many different products. And guess what? Some of these supply chains extend overseas. And if you combine that with a technique called called running lean inventory. It means you don't want to have a lot in stock because it costs you money. And so you have a situation here where I want product X, and because of the long supply chain and the lean management technique, it's not available. And so all of a sudden, well, what do we have? It's a serious issue.
Oh, no. I totally agree. The manufacturing today happens in many, many different plants around the world. The supply chain is really kind of the warehouse. It's really a virtual warehouse. And so tracking where things come from and that traceability is the bedrock principle here that we need to be able to apply to every product that's currently in production. It is what the government is expecting. It's what the statute expects, and it's what we're doing with our trusted supplier program.
And the issue here is that sometimes the evaluation and making sure it's an authentic product could cost more than the product itself, which leads into the discussion after this short break. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Steve Charles, co-founder of the Immix Group. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Steve Charles, co-founder of Immix. You probably know his voice better than mine. He's been on here many times. Talking about something different this time. Today we're talking about, you know, the federal government buying quality parts, buying quality software and hardware, and making sure that it's authentic and not other than authentic. Many of my listeners listen to the podcast and get information. They also read blogs because it's just the way that, I guess, young people under 35, 40, they read a lot of blogs. Is there a blog you have, Steve, or one you can recommend
for
my listeners?
Well, we have our company blog. It's called the Government Sales Insider, and it's at blog.immixgroup.com.
That's awful simple. I will be blogging about this interview. You can find my blog by going to Google, type in John Gilroy blog. And so it's awful simple. No muss, no fuss there. Let's go back to the subject of quality in the federal government. So we define the problem. The government realizes they're buying parts that may be fake. And if you look at a 10-year period, you have more and more high-risk suppliers than in the year 20,000 and 20,002, let's say. And so what do you do? And so the suggestion is that the vendors come up with a way to measure quality, and the definition of quality is not supplied, and the system used to define that quality is not supplied. It's very fuzzy, you know? It's like, go cut the back grass. Well, it could be 40 acres, it could be half an acre, it could be 200 acres. Just cut the back grass. It's frustrating.
Well, it's frustrating because Congress got frustrated. During the hearings, industry came to the Hill and explained how interconnected all of this is and how no one person controls it. And Congress said, all right, if you can't explain it, we are going to hold you all equally accountable for all the liability that we talked about earlier. And we're going to focus on the prime contractors first. So those contractors performing cost reimbursement contracts are held to a standard of having to develop a system. And the proposed rule came out here a few weeks ago, and this is what the comments are due on July 15th. Comments on what constitutes a legitimate system to detect and avoid counterfeit parts. The proposed rule would put this part of the system in the prime contractor's purchasing system, which, I don't know, seems to make sense. The purchasing system has to be updated to include this. The purchasing systems today already include 24 controls, but the government has failed to define what additional controls would allow the government to trust. And so we are all trying to figure out what this means in this scheme that's being proposed, and that would keep us from getting paid if the government doesn't approve the system, but the government hasn't defined the system. And that's our quandary at the moment.
And in the commercial world, a system like this usually has six basic parts. There's automated workflow that has to be set up. There's analytics for decisions, audit planning. There's the audit itself. There's a system integration, and then there's report generation. I mean, these aren't little baby. Oh, on the way home from work tonight, I'll whip up a report for the Pentagon. No, this is major, and this is a big burden on suppliers themselves. And it sure looks like they're doing what's called onus transfer. They're just transferring the onus back on the suppliers, saying, "Well, you figure it out, boys." And they could figure out the wrong thing. And how many times can you hear, well, I don't like it. Just come bring it to me until I like it. Well, that's expensive.
Well, there's that. And then there's something called the CPSRs, the Contractor Purchasing System Review Process, that happens generally every 3 years. Those auditors are going to be looking for certain salient characteristics of these systems, but we haven't defined yet what those characteristics would be. And I know you're familiar with this in your work. It strikes me that we might, as a result of this interview, actually have some longer term reasons to be working together, because everyone, suppliers and buyers, are concerned about what constitutes a system and a process that would allow the government to trust.
And let me tell you something that can be a surprise to my listeners is, hey, guess what, Buster? It's going to change on January 1st, and then it's going to change again. And oh, by the way, this is everyone's waltzing into the office with iPads. That's going to change. What's going to change again? And so they have this ideal of defined quality in a system. Well, maybe the system is perfect for here, July of 2013. I don't know. Who predicted, you know, Intel doesn't make desktops anymore? Well, who could have predicted that 5 years ago? No one.
Right. I think this dynamic of constant change over time would point to the fact that there is no such thing as 100% perfect. And what we heard in the meeting on Friday was that every participant said, we need systems and processes and ways to measure success and point to potential failures. But the idea that we will have zero tolerance and that this will be 100% perfect, given the change and the complexity of this, it's that idea is just not reasonable. So let's get reasonable. But no one knows what reasonable is here either.
In your trusted supplier program, do you incorporate something what in my world is called a supplier scorecard? Is that part of your process?
Well, we're developing this in the absence of the government defining trusted supplier. So, you know, some might think that we're getting a little bit out in front of our headlights. We are starting with the lowest common denominator, which is making sure that the items are flowing directly from an OEM or an OEM authorized partner. That's
the first layer. Yes, it's a little small part of the supply chain here, and that's tough.
Exactly. We represent a very small piece. But commercial products is what the government prefers, and many commercial products include electronic parts. So it's not a small part of the spend. It is the easiest thing for us to define, because that's our business. So our first layer is making sure that they come from OEMs and OEM authorized partners, and that we can establish traceability. We have other layers in mind, but we're hesitant to start talking about them before the government actually starts talking about what it would trust.
And I think one fuzzy thing here is that in the secondary parts world, there are brokers and then there are dealers. Now, a broker in the pure sense of the word doesn't handle anything. He just represents the buyer and seller and right out the door, supply chain. Now, a dealer will actually have a warehouse and hold something and then resell it out of the warehouse, possibly from a broker. That's one part of the chain. And they can just, you know, recuse themselves from any guilt, because they can say, well, I didn't even see this product. I bought it in Denver, sold it in Chicago, and I'm in Boston. Mm. And so within this process, you put the finger on them saying, you're responsible for this. That that was very tough to do.
Well, what the government is saying is that anybody who was part of the transaction chain.
So even the FedEx guy.
Well, third-party common carriers, we have records. We have data for that.
Oh, it's just, you'll be at the part where the plane's knocking it off the ground because they're waiting for a board that is being debated about where the parts from the board actually came from and whether validated. It's a huge problem.
Yes. We know what we can deal with today, which is who touched it along the way.
It's starting with something.
You got it.
Yeah, I'm trying to clean up the basement, and what I did is I cleaned out one wall, put everything over to the other wall. Well, it started something. And it's some kind of progress.
Did you throw anything out along the way?
Well, we're trying. And then I'm going to try to, and sooner or later, we're going to have it all thrown out. But I mean, you can't present a fully formed solution right from the get-go. Okay, here it is. I mean, agile software development states that, you know, fail early, fail often. I mean, you're going to make mistakes, but you have to at least propose some. Well, here's a proposed solution. Here, put it up and beat me up. Tell me it's wrong, but at least it's starting the discussion.
Correct. And some of the groups that are starting that conversation, the Open Group, the Trusted Technology Forum, has been working on this for a couple of years. They've got their standard out. And many of the associations are putting out standards. The government is saying, yes, we should leverage the standards that are out there. And the proposed rule, it's not actually in the rule, but the people talking about the rule said, you know, we're thinking of having the program manager, whoever's in charge of that particular program in the government, define which industry standards would apply for particular items.
And you have a real mixed match there, huh?
Yeah. I'm concerned about that because there's at least 7 standards. The Open Groups would add 8. We had Tech America had a spreadsheet that was tracking everything. It was more than a dozen. So, you know, keeping track of all of those standards and how they evolve and which one is applicable in a particular situation.
Oh, I got 10 fingers. I can do 10 standards. And that, I mean, whew, wow. And the complexity multiplies with each standard because we're in conflict with the other. And then, by the way, these standards are being revised. And so just adding one standard adds a degree of complexity that is, it's like almost like the earthquake scale. Like really, it's a whole lot more than 10's a whole lot more than 8, but a whole lot more. And it's tough to realize that. Let's take a break and come back, talk more about social media and supply chains and how the federal government can get good value out of the hardware and software that they buy. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's guest is Steve Charles, co-founder of the Immix Group. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Steve Charles, co-founder of Immix Group, and we're talking about the federal government buying parts and making sure these are not fake parts, making sure they're not counterfeit. And you may shrug your shoulders and say, well, that's not a very good problem. When people say that to you, Steve, do you just run out of the room screaming, or what do you do?
Oh, no.
You stick around.
There's always more to talk about. You know, it's really interesting when the government is holding us accountable for something that we didn't do, right? It's got our brand name on it. And so they call us up and accuse us that this is suspect counterfeit and that we have to do something, but we didn't do it. Yeah, was somebody who stole our brand, change things, and now we're 100% liable.
And now we're in a situation here in July of 2013 where the federal government wants you to come up with a definition of quality or definition of other than authentic, and come up with a system for it. And it's got to be accurate. And if it's not accurate, then you get penalized. It's a tough game to play. Many of my listeners are on Twitter. In fact, I sat down with Dick Costolo last week, the CEO from Twitter down at the Brookings Institute. And so my Twitter handle is at Ray Gilroy. What about you folks?
So we have a company Twitter handle. And, you know, I apologize. I don't know it off the top
of
my head.
It's at Immix Group _ Inc. IMMIXGROUP _ Inc. INC. And you can follow them there and find out what events are coming up and maybe see where Steve is at and grab and say, hey, Steve, that was a dumb idea and blah, 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 blah. Oh, really? Well, I think you go back and forth. I think that's what I like about events is that, you know, you hear someone on the radio, you read something they wrote, and you go up to them and go, well, you know, it's an interesting idea, but in the real world, Steve, this is how they'd have to do it. And well, I lived in the real world, John, and you get a lot better exchange face-to-face, I think, than with tweets and with blogs. I think the blogs are maybe the start of the conversation and the finish is the face-to-face.
I like the blogs. One of the things we try to do at Immix is actually hypertext link to source documents. It's very easy to get caught up in the buzz and lose track of the actual statute, the actual reg, the actual guidance. And so our blogs are source documents, link to the source documents, and that way we're always grounded in fact.
Yeah, historians call those primary documents.
Yes,
and, they're
really
important. Now, some people are listening saying, well, is he a historian? Is he a policy wonk? Is he a nerd? And they're wondering, and so what I've done is I've come up with a scientific 10-question test that'll determine if you are a nerd or not, and I'll ask you 10 questions, and all the listeners will say, yeah, I knew. He was a poser. He wasn't a real nerd. And then, of course, you may not want to be a nerd. You know, this is a tough one here. So when did you get your first personal computer? I'm not going to use that word in the future.
Sure.
What year?
Well, I believe it was the mid-80s. It was a K-Pro 2.
Okay, that's points, K-Pro. We know that one.
Yeah.
And when did you get your first cell phone?
And that was a little bit later 80s. It was one of those that was in a shoulder bag, like a purse kind of thing.
Still seeing the chiropractor to this day because of the weight of those
carrying
things.
Carrying all those heavy things around? I was so dedicated.
There used to be portable computers that you would actually stand on. And my kids Compaq had one. And this is hard to believe.
Yeah, so the K-Pro predates the Compaq.
Yeah,
and it was made out of metal. And you could stand on it.
And you could stand
well.
On it. That was the big selling point. Tell that to someone with a smartphone. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I'm Immix founder.
Okay. Yeah. And do you have a personal blog?
Well, the personal, no, I just post Meme. To the,
okay,
I post
okay.
to the
we
government sales
there.
Insider.
Do you have any personal online backup?
Dropbox.
Dropbox, that's good. What kind of smartphone do you have?
It's an Apple.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how many apps on that bad boy?
Oof. I don't know. It's at least two screenfuls.
I should ask me how many apps do you use every month or every week or something. That's a better question, I think. And here's a new question is how many tablet devices do you have in your home? It used to be if, now it's how many.
Right. Well, there are two iPads floating around the house.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. And what social networking sites are you active in?
LinkedIn and Facebook. And there's the government one, GovLoop. I'm a member of that.
Mm-hmm. Last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Ha. Huh. I'm afraid I have to say it was paper.
Meep. Okay, we'll run this through my UNIVAC in my basement, and we'll print out something on Green Bar and put it in the U.S. mail to you. And
it was about
out.
Prezi, though.
Yeah, it was about Prezi. Well, that's pretty good. That's weak. That doesn't cut it here, buddy. You know, you're never going
to
be a nerd. You're never going to be a nerd in this building, I'm afraid. You can be the category is nerd wannabe, I'm afraid. But it's probably good. A lot
that's
of people
okay.
say, yeah, they say I'm not a nerd. I'm good. They're real happy with it. I've had other people compete and try to beat the other one out for a number of nerd points. We've had a wide-ranging discussion. We talked to everyone from the federal government to NIST to supplier quality management. And I've talked about in the commercial world how they do it. And I've thrown in all kinds of strange phrases like other than authentic, which lawyers would have, 800 pages in describing that. Where do you think it's going to head? Do you think in the next 5 to 7 years, Steve, do you think your organization is going to be a leader in just trying to define the process for trusted supplier, or is it going to hand it off to an association, or is this going to be a collaborative endeavor where everyone chips in like they do at NIST, or where's this going to be heading?
Sure. I love this question. So our North Star is working for the OEMs. We started out in the 90s, helping them understand the government contracting process, the vehicles, we do that today. And now we're more actively involved in helping them organize their sales organizations, do lead generation activities for them, helping them grow their business. And that's still our focus, playing whatever role they need us to play in this in their channel of distribution, which is the government's supply chain. So we're an active participant. We have lots of ideas of how to improve the process, and we're members of many associations. So I think our role will be keeping the manufacturers, the actual creators of this intellectual property, closely in sync with the policymakers, the innovators on the government side, and the various associations that pull these ideas together and hopefully influence rules and regs that we can all follow.
I think, the key phrase that I've learned here over the years is that take your sentence and we'll put it on paper and add, as it is changing. I mean, I grew up with, textbooks that would say 1 and 1 is 2, 2 and 2 is 4. Great, that's going with it. Now, today, that's still true, but there's so many variables and switches and changes where take the security landscape. Boy, that's changing almost hourly. I mean, you try to assume something, and the minute you assume something, it's changed. And the security landscape for this, I mean, you could have a chip here that has a backdoor built in that can be trouble.
Sure. No, we're very familiar with that. We represent over 50 different cybersecurity related products, software. Some are on hardware. And we know how quickly all of that is changing. And so this thing of standards, everybody talks innovation on one hand and then standards on another. Standards actually kind of define the common denominator. Innovation is always ahead of that. And in this world of secure supply chain, we haven't really had much of either. We haven't had a lot of innovation, and we haven't had a lot of coming together and figuring out which standards are applicable where.
And in the standards, or what they do is they put up a suggested standard and they say, we're going to float this balloon out and see what happens. And then they'll get comments from everybody on the planet, and then they'll get back in a meeting and say, okay, maybe we're crazy with this. Maybe we can adjust it slightly, and they toss out again. And this is back to agile software development, finding your path by going through 32 different roads, and then all of a sudden, oh, here's the right path, because linear is gone.
Well, and a truly innovative company is looking to lead and hopefully, you know, become the standard or set the standard by example, be the best practice that everyone else adopts. And I think that's what we're trying to do at Immix Group in terms of commercial off-the-shelf products, hardware and software.
And I'm just trying to think how this is done. I mean, it's pretty tricky to suggest a supplier program, and I guess one has to be very judicious about the wording of it, because it could offend people on Capitol Hill. It could offend the OEMs. And believe me, none of these OEMs want to dupe the federal government. The OEMs want to make money in an ethical environment. And guess what? The people on Capitol Hill want to spend money in an ethical environment. And getting the two to sit down together and agree on these both highly ethical issues, I don't know how else to do it besides proposing a standard and saying, okay, let's go back to the standards management process and flex and move from there. And by the way, it's going to have to be done in 2 weeks. It can't be done in 2 years because it's going to change. Up to you, toss to you. I mean, it's just like in the radio, tossing back and forth between the standard setting folks.
Right. And let's divide up this world a little bit. The parts issue is very different from the products issue. And right now, the law or the regulations really don't make a distinction there.
Parts and products. Well, thank you very much for talking about the Trusted Supplier Program. We're going to have to end this interview. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Steve Childs, co-founder of Immix Group, talking about supplier quality management.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.